Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
Well, friends, grab your Bibles and let's go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Now, you're probably thinking, Joel, it has been a long time since we have been the book of Ecclesiastes, and you're right. But we are going to continue our series that we took pause with before the holidays. And in order to kind of bring us back to refresh our memories and get us on a good footing, I'm going to give you a brief overview and then we'll jump into part of Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Because what we're going to end up doing is we're going to split Ecclesiastes 4 into two different lessons. So first of all, Ecclesiastes really, you know, this is a term that references the gathering of an assembly. So I believe that this is written by Solomon, quite possibly written to his son to give him some life lessons before he passes along the kingdom. But what Solomon is saying, you know, I love the quote that Tony Evans has put out there, that Solomon through this book is saying, I've been there and I've done that. And what he's doing is he's giving us a lesson about life. And there are several phrases you will see over and over and over throughout this book, one of which is vanity of vanities, all is vanity. There's another phrase, under the sun. You know, so both of those are two key phrases, and what they are doing is it's pointing out that the things that we believe matter most, the things that we want to focus on in this life, really, they're worthless. They're a vapor. There are wind that is here, and then it is gone. You know, Solomon is really challenging us to look in the mirror, to see where we're spending our time, to look at the futility of our possessions, to look at the futility of a pursuit of pleasure. I ran across this quote the other day as I was reading a commentary for a book in the New Testament, and said that really the greatest pursuit that exists in our world today is hedonism. It's that aspect of chasing pleasure, chasing what makes me happy, what satisfies me. So Solomon is really challenging us to step back and to consider what truly matters most. Now, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we talked about how this passage has really been popularized by a song from the 1960s by the Byrds, and unfortunately, it doesn't provide the context for us. It just kind of gives us, oh, there's a time. Yeah, there's a time, but the so what has been missing. And we see that the latter part of chapter 3 that Solomon lays out that God has set eternity in the heart of man, that we can try to fill that gap in our heart, that longing in our soul with things on this earth. But if we do so, it will not satisfy. Why? Because we're trying to fill the void that only God can fulfill for us. As he closes one thought in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, I love verse 22. He says, I have seen nothing that is better than that man should be happy in his activities, for that is his lot. For who will bring him to see what will occur after him? In other words, you know, we do need to live in the moment. We do need to present. We do need to enjoy what we have here, but not to the point that enjoyment takes the place of God. And now he turns to chapter 4. Now, I'm going to call these next two sundries under the sun. Now, that word sundries, it's an old English word that simply means several or specialties. In other words, these are some specific things that we need to stop, we need to acknowledge, and we need to learn from. Verses 1 through 3 talk about oppression. So let's read those verses and then we'll back through them. Solomon writes, Then I looked again at all the acts of oppression, which were being done, here's that key phrase again, under the sun. And behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. So I congratulated the dead who are already dead, more than the living who are still living. But better off than both of them is one who has never existed, who has never seen the evil activity that is done under the sun. Now that is a heavy, dark, and depressing aspect. But let's work through this. Solomon, in changing the subject, goes, "Then I looked again." It was almost as if there was a reflective, a pregnant pause here, where Solomon was just kind of staring off into space, gathering his thoughts, and then he turns and he looks at examples that we see here on earth. But notice here, he talks about all the acts of oppression. And notice that he says in the middle part of verse 1, "And behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them." Can we stop for just a second? Let's point out the obvious here. Solomon is the king. Solomon is the most powerful individual in the nation of Israel. If he wanted to, he could have stopped this. He could have removed the oppressors. But we don't see him taking that action. He sees it. He recognizes that there is no escape. He sees that comfort is really not there. But the amazing part of this is he shifts that perspective again. He says, "And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them." We see twice that Solomon mentions there's no comfort. So there is a significant plight. There is a struggle that these individuals are going through. And once again, I ask the question, Solomon is the leader. Why did he not step in and get involved? But we see this word oppressors used over and over and over here. And it's a Hebrew term. And it specifically references to trample, to crush the weaker or the lower. We think of tyranny, the true picture here is of drinking fully. So, you know, think about being on a hot day. You are outside, you are sweating, you are thirsty, you're able to get a cold bottle of water, and you drink it all. The oppressors, in essence, the imagery is taking every single thing that they can. You know, when this aspect of being trampled underfoot, you know, my wife cannot stand crunchy bugs. And if there is a crunchy bug in this house, she's going to go get one of the boys, or she's going to come get me, and she wants it not removed from the home. She wants it oppressed. She wants it trampled under the foot so that it never comes back into the house again. This is a bleak picture. But notice the conclusion that Solomon has here. It's not, "I'm going to go take care of it." Verse 2, he goes, "So I congratulated the dead." What? I'm going to go congratulate the dead? This is heaviness. Because he's saying it's, you know what, the dead no longer have to deal with this. But what Solomon is really saying, even though he is not stepping forward to try and deal with it, you know, there is some cowardice, I believe, here. But it's not that he is recognizing he can't make a difference. It's really pointing to the futility. That if he goes and replaces one oppressor, guess what? Another one will rise in its place. This is one of those things that we can count on in our life. That there will be oppression. There will be injustice. There will be maltreatment. And you know what is amazing is if you go to Titus chapter 3, where the Apostle Paul is writing to Titus, and what does he say? He goes, "You should be gentle." And that term gentle is rare in the New Testament, but it references how you are mistreated. You face injustice, but what do? You do not strike back. You withstand it, and you persevere through it. So Solomon has given us a bleak picture, but he's not done. He then goes to verse 3 and says, "The one that has never been born is even better." Why? Because the one that's living is experiencing oppression. The one that is dead has already gone through oppression. The one that does not yet exist is better because they have never tasted oppression. Folks, this is a bleak picture. But again, the phrasing is important because he's looking under the sun. He's seeing that these oppressors exist. Where? Under the sun. My friends, don't lose sight of that. If we live our lives under the sun, this is what we are going to face. So verses 1 through 3, we see oppression. Let's look at verse 4. Solomon says, I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. So we see here in verse 4, not oppression, but jealousy. And again, we're seeing these phrases. Now, I'm trying to bring you back to speed here. You know, this vanity, striving after the wind, it's that fleeting aspect. The striving after the wind was another common phrase that Solomon has used, where he's trying to paint this picture that you're nurtured off the wind. Well, you can't be. But notice here, every labor, every skill which is done, what is it? It's the result. It's the outcome. The motive is a rivalry between a man and his neighbor. Why do you try to make the report that you submit at work look a little bit better than a report than someone else has turned in? Because you want the recognition. It's that jealousy. It's that envy. It's that desire to be able to have that specific spot. Jealousy is the root of all, you know, the love of money is the root of all evil. But jealousy is a close second to that. Why? Because what does God say in the Old Testament when he gives the Ten Commandments? Don't covet. Don't look at what others have and say, I should have that. Again, let me go back to Titus chapter 3. There is this aspect of malice where Paul is saying, that's what you used to do. And this aspect of malice refers to me doing something bad to you so that I get what I want. In other words, there is no ethics. The scruples, the ethics, the values, they're gone. It's all about me in this dog-eat-dog world. That's what Solomon is talking about. Again, under the sun, striving after the wind, this is where we rest. If that's not enough to make you go, whoa, this is kind of rough, he continues. So we're moving from oppression to jealousy. Look at verse 5. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. You know, this has a wonderful flavor of Proverbs within it. You know, this is one of those pieces where it is passed off and then it is going to be moved right on. Solomon is, in essence, you know what? You need to stop. You need to think this through. So laziness, this is self-destruction from foolish pride. You know, there's a penchant in our world today that I want to be paid, you know, as much as possible, but I want to do as little as possible to earn that money. You know, I was recently in a used bookstore the other day, and I stumbled upon this book from the 1990s called The Dilbert Principle. You know, I love Scott Adams, who has drawn that comic strip Dilbert for years, and I got it, and the author just writes with a tongue-in-cheek mentality. And he talks about the greatest lies of companies. And one of those great lies that he talks about is how our people are the best people. And he doesn't say a lot about it, but he posts one of his comic strips. And there you see the manager sitting in the office going, we have the best people, the brightest people in the world. That's our company policy. The next panel, one of the workers asks the question, well, sir, isn't it also company policy that we only pay below average? Thus the implication. You say we hire the best, but we don't pay the best. So do you really have the best? That is the interplay that we see with this aspect of laziness. I want the reward, but I don't want to put forth the effort. This is the opposite that we see in verse 4, where there is this constant competition, this striving against one another to be the best. This is more of a, you know what? I'm just going to fold my hands. I'm not going to work hard, and whatever happens, happens. So we see both perspectives in what Solomon is presenting to us. And guess what? Neither one is good. Because life under the sun, which removes God from our thoughts, which removes God from the equation, That is not where we want to be. So verses 1 through 3, we see oppression. Verse 4, we see jealousy. Verse 5, we see laziness. And the last thing that we're going to talk about in verse 6 is what I'm going to call reflective. Look at verse 6. Solomon says, one hand is full of rest. Let me restart that again. One hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after the wind. You know, this is kind of a play off of the phrase that we have often heard in our modern day of, you know, one bird in the hand is better than two in the bush, meaning you've got what you've got in your hand. It's better to have that than to look at what you don't have. But what Solomon is saying here, a person that is balanced, a person that has quietness, they have contentment, that's those that are starting to get close to understand the meaning of life. If you contrast this with what we see in verse 4, where there's that constant competition to be the best, verse 6, you see, well, I've got a hand that's full of rest. That's better than two hands that is putting everything in my heart and soul in order to work. We've all heard it said that no one has ever seen a tombstone that says, I wish I would have spent more time at work. We know that when we die, and that day is coming, everything that we've worked for, we will leave behind. So what Solomon is saying is even though it is dark, even though this is not the greatest thing in the world to do, if you're going to live under the sun, well, there is a better way. And the better way is not to spend your every waking moment that you have striving after the wind at work. He says it is better to have a hand that is full of rest, a hand that is reflective, a hand that understands the real meaning of life. You know, if you work to have all the possessions in the world, do you really own those possessions? No. They, in fact, are the ones that owes you. This aspect where Solomon is saying here that one hand full of rest is better, that term better means it's cheerful. It's beautiful. It is a wiser choice than trying to chase the rat race that the world is providing to us. My friends, we are inundated every single day with advertisements from, you know, those that, you know, mindlessly scroll across the screen as you're on the internet. If you're listening to music on an app, they will come in after every song or every couple of songs. It's on the radio, it's on billboards, it's in magazines, it is everywhere we turn. And what that is doing is it's telling you, you don't have enough. You need to work harder to get more stuff. But Solomon challenges that right here. Now this is positive. This is the most positive of the things that he has talked about so far. It's still talking about the rat race. But notice what he does. At the beginning of chapter 4, he says, then I looked again. There's that reflective, that pregnant pause where he's almost staring off in space, gathering his thoughts, and then he turns and sees again. He concludes right here with this aspect of reflection and balance is better than running all of your life for work and neglecting the things that really matter. There is a period here. And then we get to verse 7, and he will say, then I looked again at vanity under the sun. I'm going to stop here. We're going to start with verse 7. We're going to get into this next week. But I want to make sure that you see the contrast. Hey, you know what? It's better to rest, to reflect, and to be balanced than to chase everything. There's this pause. And then Solomon comes back and goes, you know what? I then looked again, and let me come back to things that are worthless. Things that are removing God from the equation. Things that you think will satisfy, but they really will not. So Solomon is looking at evil under the sun. And you know, if we were going to draw a lesson, or if we were going to draw a specific conclusion, then I would encapsulate it this way. When was the last time that you really stopped and reflected upon your life, your passions, your pursuits, and laid them in front of God and said, is this striving after the wind? Is this vanity? Is this a life under the sun? If you're thinking, well, Joel, I've really never done that. Can I challenge you? Go get your checkbook and take a look. See what you are spending money on. And that'll tell you whether you are striving after the wind or whether you're living the life with one hand that's full of rest. Now, my friends, we will come back to this in our next episode, but I want to make sure that you understand what Solomon is doing. Again, he's laying out for us the issues of life that is lived without God in it. And he is going to conclude with one of the most powerful statements in all of Scripture. And we're going to get there. It's going to take some time, but we will get there as he gets to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Looking forward to having you back with us as we finish off Ecclesiastes chapter 4 in our next episode. Thank you for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing that how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back with us in the not too distant future, and you